You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That two-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for 10 bucks. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Now Bonino with Grimaldi and Smith. Vilppula kicked out of the faceoff. Minute 57 gone. Faceoff one back to Hamhuis. His shot tipped into the net. And the Predators have tied it up 2 minutes into the second period. And now it is Kyle Turris moving and shoring. Kyle Turris swept the puck at the net. And it goes in over the glove of Jimmy Howard. 2-1 Nashville at 5:32. Ellis looks up to center ice, brought down by Colton Sissons. His shot, he scored! Colton Sissons rifles one by. The Predators take a 3-1 lead. They have three goals in a span of 4 minutes, 34 seconds. Puck held in the zone. Johansson battling down the right board. Perlini was there with him. Up the right side, Perose. And now a shot and a score by Matt Duchene from just inside the blue line. 4-1 Nashville at 7:36. Here's Forsberg, the shot stopped. Rebound right off the goalpost. No, they say it went in. Matt Duchene.
Nashville has second of the game on the power play. Score by number 95, Matt Duchene.
Forsberg, half court. Briosi at the point. Return to Forsberg, who comes out near the point. Now from the circle, he scores. What a ripper. He really let that one go. Power play goal for Philip Forsberg. And that's going to do it. The Nashville Predators win this one here tonight, 6-1.
And we welcome you into a Tuesday edition of Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D-Base, Marquise, Pete Weber on the call last night here on 102.5 The Game and the Predators Radio Network as the Nashville Predators defeat the Detroit Red Wings in the Motor City, 6-1. On a day where Detroit jumped out to a quick lead 3 minutes into the game, and then, you know, one period goes by, it's one zip, Preds just playing down to their competition, and then, boom, flip the switch.
Not so fast.
Yeah, you went a little Corso on us there.
A little bit.
I like it. Did you have a good night last night?
It was great. Fabulous evening. Fabulous evening. You ever have one of them headaches where you're just like, I'm calling it a day? Literally.
Wait, was it
literally
self,
went
self,
dark.
Self-inflicted or?
Self-inflicted
okay,
headache.
Okay.
Yes.
I was going to say, sometimes people have a headache just from life, and then they turn to relief.
Yes.
At the end of the evening, once children are done crying and screaming and are in bed.
That is correct.
Yeah.
But how about the Predators last night? Mm. Yeah, you know, we'll let Detroit hang around a little bit, start smelling themselves, feeling good.
Well, it wasn't long. It didn't last long.
1-0 after the first period.
Yeah, but then they said...
Joe Louis Arena. Signs of life.
Little Caesars.
Arena. Little Caesars. Papa right. John's. Domino's.
It's time to play now.
Couple of goals from Dutchie.
They did. They pulled the old boxing. You know, they let you win the first three, four rounds, and they say, okay. I might be behind in the scoreboard. Let me start really fighting now.
Little rope-a-dope.
Yeah, and then they just tag you and put you out in the eighth round because everybody's hyped. Like, yeah, they're going to lose. He's going to lose. The champ's going to lose. Not that the Predators are the champs, but I'm just going to put them as the champs in this one. The champ's going to lose. And then eighth round comes, and everybody gets quiet because the challenger is now on the canvas.
Yeah. Well, and this is a weird number, right? Like, wasn't Lavi like 1-10 against the Detroit Red Wings or something like that? And so you get that one a little bit off your back, a little bit, the monkey there, and Matt Duchene with a couple of goals. Everybody getting in on the action, right? Kyle Turris gets a goal. Nick Bonino, who's been absolutely outstanding this season, gets another goal. Forsberg picks up a goal. Matt Duchene with two, I said, but they have Jofa back together for a couple of games here, and it shows 60 goals now on the season. One of the highest scoring teams, highest, I think the second highest goal differential in the Western Conference. So you're talking about a team that's lighting people up. So this was one of those where I think a little beer game after minor struggles in two games. You know, mm-hmm. I think you come back and you put your foot down. Listen, Detroit's not only a bad team, but they're playing bad hockey. So if you're going to play not only a bad team, but one that's, I think they're like 2-10 or something like that, or 1-9 in their last 10. If you're going to be you got to beat bad teams, but you definitely got to beat bad teams that are playing bad hockey. And they took it to them last night, 5 goals in the second period.
Predators have scored now at least 5 goals in 7 of their 16 games this season. They That's had crazy. 12 all of last year, which is remarkable. And if you're tracking at home and you were listening on this show yesterday, the Predators got 2 more power play goals, so I am well on my way to a Dan Lambert tattoo. And I even got a text message last night at like 6:15 from Willie Donick, who says, "Don't know if you were watching the pregame show on Fox Sports Tennessee, but we just gave you a shout-out on the tattoo, so it's on. Now it's out on television. There's no way I could ever back out of this."
No, you're not backing out of this, buddy. It's full-fledged.
I didn't realize his strategy, Derek, but his strategy was clearly to build his brand. And so now he is on television. So good for him. And if it draws more attention to Morning Drive, I'm fine with that.
Oh, yeah.
It raises a larger question for Willie Donick, Weird Willie. Why does Weird Willie not talk more about our show on television? It's like, why is Derek, former co-host of his, why is he not talking about you more often on the show?
I don't know. You know what your next step should be? If they finish number one, put Lambert on your bum.
Well, you just settle down and get your laptop ready.
Put Lambert on your bum.
No, that's enough.
On your tuchus?
It's enough. Yeah.
Just put Dan on one cheek and Lambert on the other.
I mean, I got McFarland tweeting me last night. Porth is tweeting me. Oh, 2 power play goals, Nick. Get ready.
You did this to yourself.
Exactly.
Buddy.
Everybody's going to remind you now from here on out.
Hey, got you on TV, man. the things people do these days to get on television.
It's an outrage.
It's amazing. Can I throw out one like actually serious take about a 6-1 win over a terrible hockey team in the middle of freaking November?
By all means.
Can I throw out a serious take here? So Ryan Ellis goes into the corner and sort of throws a – it wasn't a dirty check at all. It was just a really good, clean hit.
It was
hit
a clean check. It wasn't dirty.
On Larkin.
Did he wash it? Did he wash it?
Derek, what part of I'm trying to make a serious point do you not understand?
I just thought he watched
it. It is 6:07. I'm trying to make a serious hockey point in November, all right?
Yeah. Grow up, you infant.
Come on. God. You jackals. All right. So Ryan Ellis goes into the corner, and I think it was Larkin for Detroit. It's kind of like right on his back. And he plants before he gets to the boards like you do to brace yourself, right? He plants and throws a pretty big shoulder right into Larkin's chin. Turns into a fight eventually. It wasn't a dirty hit. It wasn't like, but it was, it was one of those borderline hits where you're kind of like, okay, it was a little close to the head, but like, I understand why the other guy's upset about it, right? Sure. So it ends up being a fight. They end up getting to a scuffle. Ryan Ellis never fights. So he gets into a big fight and they both get their penalties or whatever. I'm sitting there thinking like, I don't want anybody to play dirty. I don't want to see any players like sort of become that type of player. And I don't think any Predators players in particular, and not a lot of NHL players anymore, are like that. It's just sort of been...
It's a different league.
Yeah, it's been kind of taken out of the game, which I think is good for the health of the player, which is good. But you know what else is good for Ryan Ellis? Having an opponent who has scouted you in a playoff series, having them think, just for a split second, when they dive into the corners on you in the playoffs, that give them something to think about. I want to see more of that from Ryan Ellis. I think that he, in particular, because of his size and because of how he's played in the playoffs the last couple of years, where teams have been felt totally free to go at him in the corners. Yossi, too. They will go at those guys. Winnipeg did it in the series 2 years ago. Dallas did it last year. They have no fear of diving deep into these corners on the forecheck in the playoffs. And so, again, it's a small, meaningless little play in a game in November. But what I want to see out of Ryan Ellis is more of that stuff. And I'm not saying he's not a really good defender or whatever, but like just maybe play on the edge where it's almost dirty, but not really dirty, but it's still just give everybody
still
something. Give everybody something to think about before they just go diving into the corners on every single forecheck in the playoffs. Because if they study tape on you and they're like, man, he's going to pop you, you might think twice about how hard you dive into that corner. I just... I don't know why my brain went there. I just looked at it and I said, you know what? I need more of that. I want to see that side of
just
Ryan
sending
Ellis.
A message that, hey, I'm not going to get pushed around
exactly.
like I did in that playoff series.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I think last night,
no, I like it.
A totally minor play that really meant like a whole lot of nothing in a blowout game. But I'm watching it going like, man, I want to see more of that from him for the rest of the year so that when guys are putting on tape and studying the Predators in the playoffs for a 7-game run, that they go, you know what? We can't just push around these guys and dive into the corners. We give them something to think about. Like, hey, he might pop you under your chin a little bit.
Oh yeah,
and it may not be clean, it may not be dirty, but it's sort of that borderline. But it makes you think about it, mm-hmm. and it might slow you down when you dive into the corners during the playoffs.
One person that is having, I think he's going to have a, it might end up being a career year, and it's going to make the Predators have to really seriously think about what they do during the trade deadline and or at the end of the season. It's Kyle Turris. He has half of his goals for the whole year, I believe, in only what, 15 games? He has half of his goals in over 15 games. This guy is back to form, I believe. If he stays healthy, they're going to have to make a real decision. And we talked about this.
Seven goals in 55 games last year.
Exactly. We talked about this at the beginning of the season. You know, the scenario, what do they do with Kyle Turris? And I know this is kind of far down the line, but what do they do with Kyle Turris? Do they trade him at the trade deadline to try to get something for him, or do they hold on to him during the whole season? I mean, his play has picked up tremendously, and it's going to be interesting to see what they do. If he continue to play the way he has been playing, because right now, I mean, their four lines are better than any line in the NHL right now. All four of their lines, there's nobody that has four lines that can compete with the Predators right now.
The Preds don't need the greatest general manager of all time. I've got the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you after the break.
There you go.
Exactly what they should do with Kyle Turris.
615-737-1025. The number, it is Morning Drive. We are live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. We'll get that answer when we come back. Also, one guy totally unexpected is a goal-scoring machine. And there's a guy, D-Maze, you just alluded to Kyle Turris. I think we might have the new Kyle Turris in Nashville. I'll explain next Morning Drive. It is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D-Maze Marquise with you. 615-737-1025 if Preds fans want to jump in on the conversation. Floyd Reese at the bottom of the hour. Casey Alexander to kick off hour number three of the show. But you don't need to be David Poyle.
Nope.
You have the answer for Kyle Turris.
Yeah, I want to lay this plan out for you and see what you guys think. Because I always kind of felt this was the way I thought I was going to see this playing out, mm-hmm. but I needed to see Kyle Turris actually perform well for this to work out, right?
Mm-hmm.
If he, let's just say hypothetically he's even 80% of his former scoring total, right? Let's say 60 points. Let's say he scores 50 points this year or 45 points. He's 20 goal scorer again, and he's producing like he is right now, let's say, right? He's got 8 points, 4 goals, 4 assists
mm-hmm.
in 15 games. That puts him on pace for about, you know, 45 points, which is a nice bounce back season considering he had 23 last year, 7 goals. I think you keep him all season. I think you keep him all season because he helps you win a cup this year. He gives you a depth scoring piece. He gives you versatility in the lineup. And if you are telling me that he is going to play at this level, which, again, has not been elite, but clearly back to closer to his level mm-hmm. of performance that he has shown us over the course of his career,
mm-hmm.
I think you keep him for the cup run and you move him in the offseason.
100%.
I think you trade him in the offseason because, A, his trade value has gone back up again.
Mm-hmm.
You still get to keep the player when you need him most, which is the playoffs and the Stanley Cup run. And you know you're going to need to dump salary before Roman Yossi's 9.059 AAV kicks in next year. You let Granlund or Smith walk. You trade Turris. There's your $10 million right there. So to me, that gives you the best of all the worlds, right? You dump the contract, mm-hmm. you get something in return, but you also have a player that's playing well enough to help you win a cup.
Well, when they do decide to do that and move some salary because of those big contracts kicking in, I sure hope it doesn't come at the expense of Nick Bonino, not because he looks like me, but because the way he's playing right now, and I know he's playing way above what his career indicates,
yeah.
but 8 goals, 4 assists, he's got 12 points in 16 games. Right now, he only trails Yossi, Ellis, and Duchesne in points. Nick Bonino, all of a sudden, has become an absolute monster.
He scored 22 in 2014. He had a 49-point season that year. He's never had 40 points again before or since that season. 15 goals for Vancouver in 15. He had 18 for Pittsburgh the year they won the Cup and beat the Predators. He scored 12 and 17 each of the last two. This is not a guy who scores 20 goals. So he's on pace for like he's on pace for like 36 goals. Like the odds of that happening are probably slim to none. But what Bonino does that Kyle Turris doesn't do is all the dirty work on the other end of the ice. He will kill penalties. He will block shots. He's a great defensive two-way player. So I'm with you. If you get this out of Nick Bonino, he's not an option to move because he's too valuable of a third line center because of all the stuff he does on both ends of the ice.
All right. Can I rip somebody now? Because we've been nice for like 19 minutes, and that's all.
It was a 6-1 win.
That's all good.
There's no room
nice.
For negativity.
I got to
win the Stanley.
I got to dig into somebody just
the
a little
Stanley
bit.
It's
gonna
right
get my,
there.
My talons into somebody's okay. flesh for
oh,
just a moment.
Geez.
So
what the hell? Was that a crying baby?
We,
I don't know.
Is that a baby falcon that's hungry?
Falcon.
Was that Dan Quinn crying at a Mercedes-Benz Stadium? Because he can't win a game. Mikael Granlund, or Mikael, however you guys want to pronounce the guy's name. I've heard it 5,000 different ways. I'd like to actually hear Kelly Stauffer say it on ESPN. He'd probably get it right.
If you're from Europe or Asia or Russia, I think you can say Mikael.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's fine. We're Americans. We say Mikael.
Yeah, there you go. So this guy, Granlund, right? Last night, he gets demoted to the fourth line. Seeing the lines get tweeted out from Adam Vingan about a half hour before puck drop. And I also see a tweet that he's gone 9 straight games going into last night without a point. He did not register a point last night, so that is 10 straight games without a point. We are 16 games into this season. I believe he played roughly 18 regular season games last year, give or take. So just round it up, dummy math. He's played basically half a season as a Nashville Predator. And I feel like he has been drastically unimpressive. And I, you know, for a guy that was supposed to be a second line guy on the wing after the trade deadline last year for the playoff push, I just don't feel like he's done much of anything.
Well, he's not on the power play very often, right? He's got no points to show for being on the power play right now. He's got 2 goals, 2 assists, 4 points. That's underwhelming for a $5.75 million a year player. But he also played a really good. He was really good to start the season. Like that Forsberg Duchesne Granlund line was pretty solid when they were scoring 5-6 goals a year the first couple of weeks of the year. So I'm not ready to go, you know, that hard on him yet. You know, Craig Smith has a goal. I think you could argue Craig Smith needs to be in that conversation. Like, hey, dude, where's the production? You know, you've given us 22 and 24 goals somewhere in there every year of your career except for one where he just had this really bizarre bad season. Is Craig Smith on pace for another one of those? Because, again, Craig Smith is a goal scorer, and this team is scoring tons of goals, and he's not one of them. Like, if you told me Nick Bonino is going to have 8 goals after 15 games, and Granlund and Smith would have 3, I would have lost a bet.
True, but I just feel like Craig Smith has more accolades as an – now, granted, certainly been here much longer – but like I'm willing to give Craig Smith more of the benefit of the doubt because I know what he's done as a Nashville Predator. You've mentioned short of one season, the guy's a 20-goal scorer year in and year out. I just feel like Granlund, and this is only on, you know, roughly 36 games or whatever it is as a Predator, it's like, okay, Kyle Turris has refound his form, and Granlund has picked up the Turris role of underachieving at close to $6 million a year.
I mean, sometimes it happens that way. You know, one guy picks his game up and another guy, you know, game starts to falter a little bit. I think it all evens out. Maybe Granlund picks his game up, you know, as we get further along in the season. Because, again, these are decisions they're going to have to make ultimately at the end of the season. Because if Granlund doesn't pick up his game, and he's making what, close to $6 million?
5.75.
So if you said, okay, if I had to choose between Granlund and Turris, if I'm dumping salaries, I'm dumping Granlund and I'm keeping Turris. If it's all about if it's about a salary dump based upon production this season, then, you know, because
well, you just let him walk too.
Yeah,
he's not under contract.
Yeah, you let him walk, and you don't sign him back. So, and that's money you can put toward, you know, the Yossi deal.
The problem is you need two of them. You need two of the contracts to cover the Yossi contract. And so, if it's Smith and Granlund, if it's Granlund and Turris, if it's Smith and Turris, if it's, you know, like you got to come up with two of them because Smith's making four and a quarter. He's a free agent. Granlund's 5.75. He's a free agent. And Turris is making six. So you're going to have to sort of come up with
two of the three have to
two of the three probably have to be gone. And you just gave Sissons an extension. You just gave, you know, Watson an extension. Like you're making it clear. Like David Poile used the word clarity a lot when he talked about the Roman Yossi deal. He said, now we've got clarity. Because I think it crystallizes what his next steps are going to be moving forward. Now, the question is, do you want to let two guys just walk and get nothing in return? That could be what you want to do and keep Turris because he's under contract and you see the light coming on for him. You know, Granlund's a guy who scored in his second full season in the NHL. He scored 41 points. He had 39 his third season, 44, 69, 67 points. Still only 27 years old. He had 49 points last year for Minnesota in 63 games. Mm-hmm. That's a ridiculous clip.
Sort of like Turris.
He's not that far. He's not that far off. The difference is Turris had played for a year and a half here, and Granlund's played for 31 games. And 31 games is just not a lot of games. So I see your point, Nick. I think it's a fair criticism. I just think it's a little early. 31 games is not even half a season. You still need 11 more games before you even get to a half a season to say, hey, this is what we think he is or is not. So I still think we're a ways away from that. But two of those guys probably have to go at the end of the year. And you probably would lump Nick Bonino in with that group.
Yeah, those are the four names.
But he's probably playing better. The only reason you'd lump Nick Bonino in is because he's an older player at 32 years old. He's, you know, four and a quarter for himself as well.
ESPN 102.5, the game is sending one lucky listener and a guest to Dallas with the Winter Classic Celebration Flyaway. Just like yesterday, we will qualify one person today on the show. Make sure you are listening in the 7 o'clock hour today on this show, and then again at 11 o'clock on Darren Donick and Chase, and 3 o'clock. The winner will be announced on Friday, November the 15th, during Jared and the GM at 5:30. We will give you more details later in the show, but be listening for the cue to call that is coming up at some point in the 7 o'clock hour. Coming up next, our GM, Floyd Reese, on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Braden, D-Mace, Marquise with you here on this Tuesday edition of the show. As we transition from the Preds to the Titans right now, we welcome in our general manager and co-host of Jared and the GM. Floyd Reese is with us here on a Tuesday. Floyd, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
We're doing well. I'm always curious because I feel like when you see a team that had 11 penalties, 4 sacks, 3 turnovers, like the Titans did on Sunday, like Monday I came on and I said, you know, Mike Vrabel had these guys unprepared for and ready, not ready to go for a football game. But after I think about it, I'm like, is it really Vrabel's fault or is it the players for the lack of discipline? So like when that type of game happens on a Monday as a GM, who are you placing blame on?
You know, I mean, I'm not sure you can place blame on anyone, and yet you can place blame on everyone. You know, that has not been our trend. And I think if this was something that had gone on all year long, you know, if we had double-digit penalties and had 3, 4, 5 turnovers a game, then you would say, okay, now there are real issues here. We've got to change a bunch of stuff. But we have been anything but that. You know, I think last year we were like the best in the league in penalties and have been, you know, decent all the way through. Haven't turned the ball over a bunch. We haven't done those things. And then you get into a game like this, as important as it was, and it all happens. And, you know, if somebody in the football world had an answer to that, they'd be living on their own island someplace.
Now you have this team over the last 3 years, 9-7, 9-7, 9-7. They got a playoff spot in there, won a game in between 2 9-7 seasons. Now they're on the verge of finishing less than 9-7 this season. Where does that put the GM and the head coach? And I only add the head coach in here is because it was the GM's hire. And they went from a playoff coach to a coach that hadn't been proven. And last year, yes, he worked through a lot of things last year, and he was learning on the fly. But this year, it seems like, you know, he's taken – this team has regressed. And if the team has regressed, he has regressed as a head coach. So where did this team sit with the GM and the head coach moving forward?
You know, I think you have to look at it and say, and you know this better than anybody. I mean, depending on who you play, when you play them, healthier players, your situation, all of these things change from year to year. And the tendency is, and I understand it, you know, the tendency is always compare it to last year or the year before, or, and yet, you know, if you just look at our division, let's say, you know, over the last 2, 3, 4 years, I mean, the division is so much stronger right now than it was last year, the year before. And yet, you know, I mean, you've still got to go out and win in those situations. But I think you have to be careful to jump to a bunch of conclusions early. You know, they're going to take the GM, the head coach, they're going to take their hits. And just like the quarterback, you know, if the quarterback's not playing, if the team's not doing well, quarterback's going to take hits. Is it deservedly so? Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. But it doesn't matter. You know, you're the quarterback, you're going to take hits. You're the head coach, you're going to take it. GM, you're going to take it. I mean, the only area in my mind, I think, that you look at this team and think, okay, they aren't better than the team was maybe 2 years ago, let's say, is right now the offensive line, you know. And as you know, on offense, I mean, if your offensive line is struggling, you're going to struggle. And you can't, you know, you go into a game of this magnitude with it facing this front, and you've got a journeyman center and a rookie right guard and a left tackle that decided that this was going to be a game that was going to be one of his worst. I mean, you know, the chances of you pulling something out get slimmer and smaller and a lot more hard.
Floyd, I look at the way this team on offense plays in the first half, and we all acknowledge all the issues. The receivers aren't getting open. The offensive line, like you said, is probably the worst, or is at least regressing from what we expected after heavy investment in the offseason. The idea that this team has got 0 points in the first half like four different times this year, especially when we all looked at a Carolina defense and saw how bad the rushing defense was, and then you see Derrick Henry get 2 carries. How much of the game plan and not being prepared or not being, you know, having the right strategy in place, like how much of Arthur Smith's decisions going into a game are you concerned about, and how much of that is on just personnel or how a game plays out? Like how much of it truly is the offensive coordinator didn't prepare his offense for a football game?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you prepare. You know, you get the first series, you march right down the field, you miss a field goal with your kicker. Okay, you don't prepare for that. Then you turn around. The next time you get the ball in the series, you're like behind 10 to nothing. Then, you know, you get the ball again and you're behind 17 to nothing. Well, when it's 17 to nothing and you're in the second quarter, I mean, whatever game plan you had is very likely out the window. You know, now you're struggling. Derek doesn't get his touches. Why? Look at how many times we had penalties, and instead of being first and 10, second and 7, it's first and 10, first and 20, first and 30. You know, I mean, we had series where we were getting penalized a lot more yards than we were gaining. And I think when those kinds of things happen, you know, to line up on first and 25 or 20 and say, okay, we're going to, you know, run the ball down their throats, I mean, that's what they're hoping you try to do. So I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't know how you analyze that other than to say, you know, I think everything turns into a scramble at that point in time where now you're trying to say, okay, what's the best thing we can do? I mean, in my mind, the first half of that game, the only guy that played that approached what you were hoping you would see was the quarterback. And he threw some passes. You know, he throws one to Brown, it's off his hands, interception. You know, it's an interception, and it'll go on his record, but I don't know how you blame him for that. And you know, you look at the ability to move the team. I mean, there were times there where we were struggling to stay ahead of the penalties and ahead of the fumbles and ahead of the whatever else happened. So, you know, it's really, really hard, and I think you just have to, you know, kind of analyze it and try to figure it out, realize that, you know, what could he have done different in that situation? You know, and the average fan's going to say, well, he should have run Derek more. Well, yeah, I mean, again, I think that it's first and 30. The defense is saying, fine, give it to the running back. We'll give you six or seven.
Floyd, last year we saw this team win a couple of games that not many people anticipated them winning, most notably the Eagles and the Patriots at Nissan Stadium. This week you have the Kansas City Chiefs coming to town. They're a decisive road favorite. Is there any reason to believe that we can get one of those type of wins this year like we did last year, or is this going to be an uphill climb?
Oh, it's going to be an uphill climb. I mean, there's no doubt about that. You look at this Kansas City team, and you just look at the running back, what he did last week. You know they've got an all-pro tight end. You know they've got a group of receivers that, you know, can outrun. They outrun everybody except the other receiver, you know, or the running back. The running back pops, and he's running 20 or 21 miles an hour for a 91-yard touchdown run, and the only person that can catch him is his receiver. And so, you know, they're a special team. They really are. It looks like the quarterback's going to be back. I mean, it's going to be tough. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And yet, you know, if you're one of the Titans, you're going into this thing, thinking to yourself, hey, we can pull off of Philadelphia. We can pull off of New England. But they're going to need some, you know, an awful lot of help.
All right, I want you to put your scouting cap on, and if you have not done so yet, I am now personally and publicly requesting this of you. I would like to know what you think of Tua Tagovailoa, Joe Burrow, Jake Fromm, Justin Herbert, any of these guys that could be potentially grading out as first-round picks next year. What have you seen from them as far as NFL upside, and are any of them, in your mind, guaranteed starters and successful players?
From what I've seen, and I haven't seen every game, I mean, the one that looks the most NFL-ready that I've seen a bunch is probably Burrow. And yet, you know, there's a lot of discussion about that. You have to love Tua for what he's done, and yet, you know, those injuries are a concern. And you don't want a guy that's going to come into the league. I mean, you know, he's struggling to stay healthy there and you know, probably will end up with a team that won't have as good a protection as what he had in college. So, you know, where does that end up? Herbert, the guy at Oregon, I mean, he looks like the real deal. But, again, I haven't seen, you know, I've seen probably bits and pieces of three games. So I don't know. You know, it's still wide open. There's a lot to do. I'll tell you, if, in fact, they head in that direction, there will be so much scrutiny and so much time spent on those guys that, I mean, you'll know more about them than you want to know.
Floyd, always a pleasure. We appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, guys.
You got it. Floyd Reese joining us every Tuesday here on Morning Drive. So there you go. He likes Burrow, I think, maybe a little bit more than Tua, probably because of the injuries.
It's
all right. He's entitled to be wrong.
I mean, I think Tua's going to be a good quarterback in this league. He's going to have to adjust to guys not being completely wide open. And he's going to go to a team that maybe don't have much going on for themselves, i.e. the Miami Dolphins. So he's going to take his lumps. But I think he's going to be a good pro. Herbert, I hadn't watched much of Oregon game, so I don't know. But he's dead on. The more and more I watch Joe Burrows, the kid is just, I mean, if there's any quarterback, now things can change and, you know, he can get in the pros and it can be a dumpster fire. I don't know. But from what I've seen, if there's any person that's ready for the NFL, it's him.
I agree. So. I think LSU has a better pro prospect at quarterback than Alabama this weekend.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean he's a better player.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean he's a better college player. It doesn't mean he's going to have a better college career. If you're just saying, which one would I take right now, if I'm on the clock, am I taking Tua or Joe Burrow?
So right now the Bengals would have the first pick because they're the only winless team.
The Bengals are actually the team that's on the clock right
Dolphins
now.
Dolphins actually won a game by accident and might fall into Chase Young at two.
Well, and they beat the Redskins, who have one loss or one win, so they're
but
actually
the
number two.
The Redskins not taking a quarterback, you know
The Redskins
that.
Are number two, so the Dolphins are actually number three right now. But, I still would rather have Chase Young this year and try for Trevor Lawrence next year. I would try to make it a two-year draft.
Who are you talking about, the Miami Dolphins?
Anybody, whoever you are. I would shoot for the Trevor Lawrence sweepstakes. That's the one I'm going all in for. I'm not going all in for any my and I want Floyd to really study this stuff as much as anybody, because I want to know at the end of the year. I don't see it out of Justin Herbert. I don't know why people see this superstar NFL player. He's a really nice player. I don't see it. Like, Tua, I think, is going to be fine in the NFL, but I don't think there's any guarantee. I think Burrow's got the most complete package from a size, skill, leadership, teammates love him, arm strength, running an NFL offense, all that stuff. You know, Jake Fromm, there's questions about his arm strength, more of a late first round Derek Carr type guy. I just don't see a guy that is worth going all in for at number one. Even Joe Burrow, I like him a lot. I just don't see it as far as Trevor, like compared to Trevor Lawrence next year. It's not even close, in my opinion. And I think most NFL GMs said that last year, right? He'd be the number one pick last year, Trevor Lawrence. NFL GMs were on the record saying that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I would be, if I'm an NFL team, Bengals, Redskins, Dolphins, whoever, any of these teams that are really, really, really bad, I'm shooting for the number one pick in 2021.
Coming up next, the clock is ticking on one man, and it was said by one individual yesterday on this show. Details coming up next on Morning Drive.
Yeah, no, the clock went on as soon as they benched Marcus Mariota. The clock was ticking, because they've got to find the next guy. And if the next guy isn't the guy, then they're all gone. That's why I said 2021, we're going to find out if this coaching staff and if this GM and his group are going to continue or not. Because if they don't have the right quarterback at that point and can't get this team to the next level, then they're going to find somebody else who can.
That was Corey Curtis from News 2 yesterday joining us here on Morning Drive, as he does every Monday at 7, coming off of a Titans game. And D-Mace, you asked him that very question yesterday. So when we look at the clock ticking on John Robinson, I'm curious, he mentioned the benching of Marcus. But I would think that when you're a GM who comes into a franchise with one head coach, makes a change at that position, and goes with another head coach, that the clock actually started the day Vrabel was hired. So where are we leaning? Is it more the clock ticks with Mike Vrabel or with the benching of Marcus Mariota?
I think it got expedited with the benching of Marcus Mariota. Because, you know, when you fire, for whatever reason, when you fire a guy that won you a playoff game that year, then when you hire the next guy, I think the owner is like, okay, all right, you made this decision. Now he needs to be worth this decision. Now he's a first-year head coach. We'll give him some years. But this team needs to be trending up. Well, the next following year, they were 9-7. But then the team seems to regress in year two of his tenure. And he benches the starting quarterback that they drafted second overall. I think that speeds the clock up just a little bit more on the GM. And it's unfortunate that the head coach is then collateral damage, because he's the guy that the GM chose to hire in place of a guy that won you a playoff game. I never understood that move. It was not many teams make a move like that. Not many teams say, you know what? You went to the playoffs, great. You won a game, great. But now we're going to fire you. After you had a 9-7 season, then you came back with another 9-7 season and made the playoffs. But we're gonna dismiss you now. We don't need your services anymore. You better get the ship right. The ship, please, people, ship right. And if you don't,
or
then,
or the other one too,
yeah, or the other one,
get the ish right.
If you don't, then you know this is a hardcore business, and they praised you when you came in, and people are going to be, you know, crucifying you as you leave, because this team regressed. They didn't get any better. They regressed to a point where, you know, you're not going to even win 9 games. You might not even go 8-8. If they don't go 8-8, then I think it's a huge disappointment and an indictment on everybody.
Yeah, I think the everybody line is pretty fair. If they don't, again, I thought this team was going to be 10-6 and be a good football team and compete for the division title. And so far, we can't say that that's definitively one way or the other. It's not trending in a positive direction. To your original question, and I think that's an everybody problem, right? If you don't accomplish your goals as a team, you win as a team, you lose as a team, a coaching staff, you know, a collection of players, a front office, you're all together in this at the end, and everybody deserves blame. But more the blame falls on the head coach, the general manager, and the quarterback, like more so than and the two coordinators, probably more so than anybody really probably deserves. I think the clock started officially. This is the same I feel with athletic directors in college. Like, Philip Fulmer should be evaluated on his hire of Jeremy Pruitt, almost first and foremost. So football is the most important, most financially viable thing that you do as an athletic director at a power university. Well, what are the two things you do as a general manager? And one is hire a football coach in the NFL and build a roster. And the most important part of building the roster is the quarterback. So can you find a quarterback, and did you hire the right coach? I mean, the clock for me started when he hired Mike Vrabel, because there's not many coaches that win a playoff game for a franchise that hasn't won a playoff game in two decades that would then get fired. So it is how it happened is part of this equation, right? That it happened in such a weird way, and that it sort of went down the way it did, and that fans were sort of torn. Not everybody was torn. I mean, most people didn't think Mularkey was the right guy with the upside, and that's fair. Some did. Some liked him. Some thought he deserved another shot. So because it was sort of mildly controversial, I think that's why it started with him. The move from Marcus, he almost kind of – he doesn't get a pass on it because he did something to bring in a backup that actually helped the situation.
For two games.
For basically no money, though, right? True. Like, for $2 million and I can't remember what the draft pick was. He gives up a draft pick to go get – a better option, what could be a better option, and has, you know, his decision on who he selects is how we will evaluate. It's not that Marcus has been benched. It's that if he decides to trade up to get Joe Burrow or whoever, or he gives $22 million to Teddy Bridgewater, whatever his decision is, that's the decision we judge it on, not whether or not Marcus, because he didn't draft Marcus, so he doesn't get... It's not sort of hanging around his neck.
Here's something, and I haven't heard anybody bring this up. Nobody. And I brought it up to TD yesterday as we were walking out, because the Tennessee Titans are going to be in the market for a quarterback. Now, whether, you know, it's Bridgewater, as much as I like Bridgewater, I'm not going that route if I'm a GM. I'm not. Because ultimately, you just got to get your young quarterback.
Totally agree.
Yeah, you got to get your young quarterback. Whoever that young quarterback is, you got him.
Is Teddy Bridgewater significantly better than paying Ryan Tannehill contract or Marcus?
I mean,
he's not.
Yeah, I mean, Bridgewater's better, but is he going to make your team that much better?
Well, Bridgewater's going to get far more dollars than Tannehill. Right. I'll take Tannehill at a cheaper price.
And he's great with the Saints.
Exactly. Yes. And their offense and the way they run it. Like, but here's the thing, and y'all answer this question for me, and we can get more into it later. If they are in the market for a quarterback, if they don't fire the head coach, which I don't think they will, do you trust Arthur Smith with the young quarterback?
No, I don't.
You're right.
And I don't trust him because, his offensive line is trash.
You're right.
So he's already got, like, negative things working against him. Because the offensive line, the bottom line is, and by the way, speaking of offensive lines, the Cowboys last night on Monday Night Football, Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones, 31% of their salary cap invested in the offensive line, six Pro Bowlers, and three All-Pros. John Robinson invests in the offensive line, just doesn't have the success.
Well, I can't tell if the Cowboys are a good football team, though.
No. They're overrated.
What are they? Like, I actually honestly don't know how good the Cowboys are. Now, they lost some games when they didn't have two of those pieces, right? Like Tyrone Smith was out and the other guy was out.
Collins.
Lael Collins is out as well for a couple of games and they lost. And so maybe to your point, Nick, that's why they deserve credit for investing the way they did. Again, they were going to take Johnny Manziel and instead took an all-pro offensive lineman.
Yep.
That was the smart, savvy thing to do. The Titans could be faced with that exact same decision. Like, do you take the flashy quarterback at 17 or do you take an ugly, you know, the big ugly along the offensive line? I'm sure he could be very handsome in real life. I didn't mean to insult the offensive line prospect here. Like, do you take the big ugly that's not sexy, that doesn't win you the press conference, that fans aren't, you know, jazzed about the next morning, or do you take what could end up being a total bust at quarterback?
Yep.
Which is the smarter strategy? And to build the offensive line, like especially at center, mm-hmm. where you know you need a guy that is clearly going to be the next guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you had a chance to take the best center in the draft at the 16th overall pick or the 15th overall pick this year, or even a tackle to replace Conklin, and then all of a sudden you come back the next year and you get a quarterback, your quarterback's going to be in a better situation to succeed, and you may know at that point whether or not Arthur Smith is the guy or not.
But to your point, no. Yeah. I don't think Arthur Smith's the guy. I didn't think he was the guy that the day they hired the guy.
Yeah, I'm not.
He hasn't earned.
I am not in this situation, based upon what we've seen. He's not a – I'm not saying he's a bad offensive coordinator.
But there's a difference in deserving the chance,
yeah.
which is what everybody sold us.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
he was true. In the organization for
and
7 years.
Does.
He was on all these coaching staffs. He didn't work for his dad at UPS. He started at the bottom. There's a difference between being deserving of a job and being the best available for that position.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right about that. Did he deserve the job more? Probably, yes. Now, was he the best guy for the job? Probably not. I don't know. But
it's the Peter principle.
Yeah. But if I am drafting a quarterback this year, do I trust him with that quarterback moving forward?
Yeah.
And the answer, based upon what we've seen, is probably not.
I think it's too soon to just say definitively whether or not he is or is not the answer at offensive coordinator. It's that we're only 8 games in. He doesn't have a starting quarterback, and the offensive line is trash. So like, it's not. I don't think it's necessarily 100% a fair shake on him yet. But he hasn't answered a single question. He hasn't. Any question we had when he was hired has not been answered in the positive yet. Right? We haven't said anything. We can't point to anything definitively and say, oh, well, that's clearly better than we thought it is.
I think we've seen enough. So, to know.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think
I've seen enough there's somebody out there better. I'm not saying that he's bad, but moving forward, if they're going to draft a young quarterback, I think they need someone else. And not to say that he's a bad coordinator,
yeah.
but I just think they need someone else
and
coach that potential number one guy.
Yeah. I would compare that to Mark Stoops getting the Florida State job.
Mm-hmm.
If he's given the job from Kentucky, I view that as being promoted beyond the point of your competency. Like, Arthur Smith is probably a really good special teams coach, a really good offensive line coach, a really good tight ends coach. You know, all the
he was a really good tight ends coach.
He's a really good member of a staff, but he might have been promoted beyond the point of where he can excel. Like, I think Mark Stoops is perfect when there's no expectations at Kentucky and you need to go 7-5.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Mark Stoops is the guy that can win national championships at Florida State when the expectations are through the roof.
Yeah.
So that's called that's the Peter principle right there. And maybe Arthur Smith's a victim of that.
Coming up tonight is the first playoff rankings revealed by the College Football Playoff Committee. But on this show, for weeks and weeks and weeks, we do our top four Tuesday in the world of college football. We will do that when we come back, because Derek Mason, what is today?
It is top four Tuesday.
And if you want tacos, you can have those.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Memorial Day Sale and get 30% off paints and stains May 15th through the 28th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.